Well, it's human nature to want to photograph ourselves at nature's most imposing sites, and social media certainly makes it easy to share. But there's a growing concern about how social trails may damage ecosystems. Joining us this morning is Claudia Voigt. She wrote her thesis on social trails in 2016, and she now works at California State Parks on the North Coast. Good morning, Claudia, and welcome to The Exchange.
Good morning.
Well, this is interesting. Let's start off, first of all, for people who maybe have never heard this term, what is a social trail?
It's just trying to contrast the trails that have been created by the park maintenance and park management from the trails that visitors create when they walk off from those formally designed trails to see places that are off that formal trail network.
And I guess this is a growing problem, not just in the redwoods, but all around the world with everybody seemingly packing a smartphone these days.
Yes, I think it's not just has to do with people packing a smartphone, because long ago, before people had smartphones, they would already wander off trail because the formal trails can never provide access to all the places that people might want to explore or see. So actually, the first studies about this phenomenon are as old as the parks here in the United States. Even in the Redwoods, actually, the first study on social trail impacts and recreational impacts has already been done in 1928 when the first state parks were created.
I know when I was younger, I was a pretty bad mountain climber, but we used to have a term called peak bagging, and I guess this is kind of a modern version of that, where you climb a mountain and you photograph yourself and you brag about it, but now you can share it with the whole world, can't you?
Yeah, and it's just any kind of record that can, it's a good example with the peak bagging, but now it's where there's all those different kind of record holders, the tallest tree, the oldest tree, the biggest tree, or other places that are just very hard to get to for some other reason, seem to be of special interest to get yourself a photo of.
And right here in our backyard, we have that Hyperion tree. Tell me why this became such an issue.
Actually, the issue, as far as I'm concerned or know of, is not so much with the Hyperion tree, which is the tallest tree in the world, but rather with the biggest trees in the world. It's a group of trees that is collectively known as the Grove of Titans. It has been described by the same researcher as the Hyperion, and then a book was published a few years after that, 20 years ago. And in the book, it just talked about this hunt for the big trees and how exciting it is, and also described the location of this so-called Grove of Titans. And that's when people first started to look for this group of trees that is known as the Grove of Titans.
You can join our conversation this morning with Claudia Voigt. She wrote her her thesis on social trails in 2016. You can call us at 800-838-3760 or email us a question at jx@jeffnet.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Jeff Exchange. Well, back in those days of peak bagging, you would maybe put the picture up on your office wall, and if somebody wandered in, they might see it. But I guess today a big problem is that you can now use GPS to locate some of these specific sensitive sites.
Yes, that is correct. And it adds to that aspect of treasure hunting, that if someone publishes a description and maybe some GPS coordinates, and then people print that out and go out in the forest with this description. But since those record holder trees are mostly surrounded by other trees that are equally magnificent in stature, and for us as any human being, it's like completely impossible to differentiate a tree that is 6 meters and 10 in diameter from a tree that's 6 meters and 30, or whatever, 30 feet in diameter. Most people don't even know, so they just have their maps and their coordinates, and they walk from one tree to the other and start wondering, is this the tallest or biggest one? Because it's just that they're so big and so tall that we're just too small to get this, to be able to tell even which one is that. That's the difference between peak bagging and looking for record holders in the redwoods. You know when you're on top of the peak, but you do not know when you stand in front of one of those arbitrary kind of out of a group of magnificent trees.
In your specific research that you've done in the forests, what kind of damage are we talking about in terms of the ecosystem?
It's oftentimes damage to the understory vegetation and to the soils. And so it's the redwoods have their fine feeder roots in the first 5 inches of the soil. And when a lot of people walk on that that soil, then not only get the litter and the duff gets first compacted and then displaced, but also the soil below it hardens. And so the fine feeder roots often die off. But more than that, it's that the redwoods are this amazing ecosystem that has so much diversity and sheer like biomass also in the understory that when a lot of people go into there, it just diminishes the vegetation cover, like, you know, like all the mosses, the lichens, the ferns, the shrubs, the small plants that are there are very sensitive to trampling. And so they, with a few passes of visitors going through there already, you can see that there's a loss in vegetation cover.
I was really surprised as I was reading up on this to learn that redwood trees actually have a relatively shallow root system.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to say. Like their fine feeder roots are in the first 5 inches of the soil, on the in the top of the soil, and that's what makes them so susceptible to being trampled and to die from the soil hardening and being compressed.
You know, on one hand, we want people to access the wilderness, and certainly, I think sometimes people can go out and have such a profound experience in nature that it changes their attitudes, improves their attitudes about taking care of nature. But then on the other hand, as you've discovered with the research that you've done, it can create some very serious problems for the ecosystem. How do we go about trying to balance access to the wilderness without creating, you know, a bigger problem?
That's a very good question, and that's the main management question that people are facing now, that on the one hand, there's more visitors every year that come to the parks, and that the park then needs to provide adequate infrastructure for all those visitors to be able to enjoy. So one thing is to just make sure that your trails, the formal trails that are in the parks, are well maintained and that they're able to hold the amount of visitors that comes, and also make it so that the visitors can actually know if they are on the formal trail. If it's well designed, it's clear, okay, there are trail signs here, this is the trail that I'm supposed to walk on, and also let them know what impacts it has if they walk off those trails. Because most people, once they find out that this can cause damage if they walk off the trail, they understand and have a different reaction to it. And also it's important to give them the access to what they want to see. So make a spur trail into an area where so many social trails have gone and might be a possibility in some places to just limit and concentrate the impact that people have on one trail corridor instead of having a spider web of unmaintained trails going through that whole area.
I know that budgets are always tight, it seems. Is it very costly to try to build these particular facilities to, for lack of a better word, herd people in the correct direction to protect the ecosystem?
It is more that, as you said, because of the funding and budgeting issues, even the maintenance of the existing trails is already behind in some places because there are just too many trails and too little funding for it, so that building any new trails will add to this already hurting budget. And that's why for some of those places there is now funding campaigns where also the Parks Conservancy is trying to raise funding for having those new projects. Because for sure, especially if you want to make those trail systems so that they're especially well-designed and you have the possibility to do a well-designed boardwalk or even reroute a trail from its where it right now would go to be able to put it on a better alignment, as we say, so maybe on a less steep slope or something. That costs more money than just doing the simple maintenance on the trails.
If you have access, if you have a question about access to some of these trails and issues with the ecosystems, you can give us a call this morning. We're speaking with Claudia Voigt. She wrote her thesis on social trails in 2016, and she now works for California State Parks on the North Coast. Do we have a danger of becoming elitist in how we decide who has access to the trails? How do we wade through that?
Who has access to the trails?
Yeah, have you seen any pushback from people who say, well, I should be able to go where I want out there, and you're trying to allow certain people out on trails and keep other people out? Have you had any kind of reaction from that?
No, more it's because all the formal trails that are there are accessible for everyone, for the public. It's more that it's oftentimes once people find one of those special places that they have the sensation of, oh, I see how much damage the trampling does. And so while I'm glad that I'm here, I do not want the public to be able to access this place. It's more this, probably I myself didn't do so much damage, but if other people came here, that would be the damage. So it's more this, people having to learn that every single person who goes there does damage, not the thousands or the multitude, but it's rather that in those fragile ecosystems that every person walking off the trail adds to the damage. And I think that's good to keep in mind when you decide. Because obviously there's some places where people are just, there's no trail here, and I would like to explore and discover this area and at least be knowledgeable about treading lightly and the footprint that one has. I think that's what people keep in mind.
Well, you mentioned knowledge, and that kind of makes me think, other than trail management and the things that you're already doing, how can we better educate people about how to protect ecosystems?
Oh, there's, I think that it's important to have good signage along the trails, which there's this one message on small signs that has been used in some of the national parks that is plants grow by the inch and die by the foot. And I think it's a good image for people to understand. And then it's good also to tell them, yes, you are here, you are in this place where you are surrounded by the biggest trees of the world, and that to be respectful about it is going to make it so that our children and grandchildren can still enjoy them as we can right now. So I think that it's just as reminding people along the trail with having the good poignant signage, but also having a sign maybe that explains about the whole ecosystem and how it's not just the trees themselves, but what they provide to so many other species that it makes this whole magnificent world out there.
We've been talking about ecosystems, and I realize that maybe people don't understand, and I know it's very complex depending upon the particular ecosystem, but what is an ecosystem?
Oh, I don't have a good definition for it, but I would say that it's all the species together that share a certain habitat, a certain place to live, and it's differentiated from others by its specific climate, by the assemblage of plants and animals and microbiota in the soils, and all that together makes it one specific ecosystem.
You mentioned climate, and I'm wondering in particular with your work in the redwoods and around that area, what impact have you seen from climate change?
It's hard to I'm not a specialist on climate change impacts on the forest ecosystems at all, and it is hard to say for such a long-lived species at redwoods, as redwoods, which already have lived along some of those trees through several climate changes, through the small ice age. And so for them, it's just a kind of fluctuating of colder and warmer temperatures, even within the lifetime of a single tree. And I would say that for them, it's more the microclimate changes that are so important, like if you clear cut a big area around a group of tall trees, then they will all be more susceptible to wind coming through or through drier air coming through, because a forest creates its own climate by having like big swath of forests and many trees together. And so that's our changing the habitat and fragmenting the habitat so much is more what we can see immediate impacts, like having the crowns of the giant redwoods die from being now more out in the open and more susceptible from the wind. The very tops, you can see that a lot.
Redwoods are pretty resilient to climate changes, aren't they? I mean, to everything except maybe mankind coming in.
It seems to us that it is that way, yeah.
And for people who want to have more information on this, do you have a website or where they can perhaps obtain some info?
Oh, there's for sure, if they just wanted to find my study, it is on the National Parks website. They can find it. And then there's also, if they're interested in funding a new trail work, network in the Grove of Titans, they could just Google that, and then they will find the website of the Parks Conservancy and find out more about donating there and also what the specific problems in this area are.
And going forward, what's your next step to try to protect the redwoods?
I would say, because I'm personally not working in the roads and trails, but as for sure, it's trying to raise enough money to find a solution to improve trails in those areas that are susceptible to trampling and that have this bigger influx of visitors, and see which solutions could be found there. And for example, Stout Grove, which is one of the highly visited redwood groves, to see how trails could be improved there to handle the higher amounts of visitors.
We've been speaking this morning with Claudia Voigt. She wrote her thesis on social trails in 2016. She now works at the California State Parks on the North Coast. Claudia, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.